We have another great show for you this week. We're going to kick it off with week 5 in the NFL. I brought a couple of guests from the Worst Take Network to help us go through the good, the bad, and the ugly, and a couple of more things from this week in the NFL. I'll be talking about the NBA championship and the Los Angeles Lakers, what this championship means for the Lakers, for LeBron, and for the Miami Heat and Jimmy Butler. I'll then go through my Major League Baseball picks. I was perfect in the last round. Let's see if I can do it again this round. Then we'll talk some NHL, giving some draft grades out for some of the teams now that we're done with the NHL draft. And then in the fix, we're going to fix LeBron James. We're going to start this week off in the NFL. I brought a couple of friends along to talk about week 5, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'm joined this week by Mike DeFran from the 12th Man DeFran podcast and Tyler Crowder from Kicking It with Crow. They're both part of the Worst Take Network, and they're going to join me and help discuss what happened in week 5. That's next. Welcome to Sports Fluent. This week, we've got a round table for the week 5 review of the NFL. We're going to go through the good, the bad, and the ugly, and I brought some friends along from the Worst Take Network. First, we have Mike DeFran from the 12th Man DeFran podcast. Mike, how you doing?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing well. And Tyler Crowder from Kicking It with Crow. Crow, how you doing, buddy?
What's up, brother? How you doing, Anthony? Thanks for having me on, man.
I'm doing good. So this week, as with every week in the NFL, had way too many injuries, a couple of upsets, and it was another great week. I'm glad to have football back. So I want to go around the horn here with you guys, and I'm going to give you my good, my bad, and my ugly, and I want to hear what you guys think, and if you got one, throw in yours. So I'm going to start with my good, because this one's kind of close to my heart, because I've suffered some injuries before. So my good is seeing Alex Smith. After 17 surgeries, a couple of years out of the league, we thought his career was done, getting a chance to come back in for Washington, and looked okay, but healthy enough to play. I think it's a great story. I think if he gets anywhere near to the player he was before the injury, Washington might not have a horrible year. What do you guys think of that?
Tyler, you want to start off?
Yeah, you got it, brother. You got it.
All right. Well, first of all, I just have nothing but respect for Alex Smith. The way he's fought to come back and to work his way out of all those surgeries. I mean, I think at one point they said, like, there was an infection and it was life-threatening. And so for him to come back was just completely – I mean, I was applauding from my couch. The second thing was watching him, I felt like a mom. I felt like, ooh, don't get hurt. Don't you know, twist your ankle. Don't do anything like that. And I was so concerned for this man that I have so much respect for. So I have nothing but applause and respect for Alex Smith coming back and doing what he did. Obviously didn't win, but he's just so inspirational for every athlete who got an injury.
But that's two good points you brought up, though, because the one thing I forgot to mention, yeah, he had an infection after a couple of those surgeries, and they were talking about amputating his leg. Mm-hmm. And then to the mom comment, when I saw his wife in the stands, she didn't look excited that he was back in the game. She looked really concerned. And you saw the second he completed that first pass and took his first hit, there was like this sigh of relief. You know, you could tell, even though it was just from him and his kids. It was great to watch, right? That's why we watch the NFL.
Yeah.
For stories like that.
Yeah.
Tyler?
Awesome.
And that's the thing. Alex Smith, I mean, this is a guy who's been a great competitor in the league, played for the 49ers. Of course, you know, led this Chiefs team. Let's not forget about what he did with the Kansas City Chiefs, handing the torch over to Mahomes. He doesn't get enough credit for that. And, you know, he was playing great with Washington. They were actually 5-2 when he broke his leg against Houston. So ever since then, this team has not really had its quarterback. And, you know, what you said, he almost had his leg amputated. But he's out there playing NFL football, the best of the best. And, you know, when he took that first sack, you know, I cringed a little bit. You know, you don't want to see something like that happen again, especially with what he went through. I mean, people were saying he should retire. And he got back out there. He proved everyone wrong. And we'll see what he does going forward. But, you know, it's just a great story. And I think that you picked a great first topic there with the good.
And think about it, right? Washington, quarterback, Joe Theismann, same injury, similar play. And now granted, modern medicine, right? But he was never able to come back again. So it is amazing that he was able, especially having the setback to of the infection, to come back and play. And I think you're right when you touched on the Chiefs, because I don't think we maybe give him enough credit. But if you talk to Patrick Mahomes, he'll tell you, Alex Smith bringing me in, taking me under his wing, showing me the way to be a professional, really, I think, exponentially started his growth process in being able to take over that starting role. And obviously, we saw what Mahomes has been able to do since. So, all right, I'm going to move to the bad. And unfortunately, there was a lot. I had a lot to choose from. I'm looking at my notes thinking, I have like three or four, but I'm going to go with, because I have the Falcons. I do. But I'm going to go, as you can tell by my Bears jersey in the back, I'm going to go with the Tampa Bay offense. So I called a blowout in week one, but I said, but then they'll get it going. And they did. Mm-hmm. But this week against the Bears, and don't get me wrong, it's a very good defense, but they still looked out of sync, right? The offensive line, and you need to have a good offensive line in front of Brady, looked a little shaky. I think missing Chris Godwin, right, as that deep threat, I think Brady went 0 for 7 on passes of 20 yards or more against that game against the Bears. Yeah. So do you guys think more Bears defense, Tampa Bay offense? Combination?
I think personally it's a combination. I think the Tampa Bay offense they haven't gone up against a lot of great defenses. And when they went up against the Bears, you could clearly tell the Bears were overmatching them and they were just a better unit overall. Kyle Fuller had that amazing hit that just, I mean, got everybody up. That was amazing. I think the Bears defense is just so, so good. But I say that they're a little out of sync because on that last drive, when Brady didn't know what down it was, I mean, that would never happen if he was under Belichick. That never happens. He's amazing in those situations. So clearly, something's not connected, or the coaches and the Tom are not quite in sync. I don't know. I thought that was really weird. That's something so out of character of Tom Brady. But I won't disrespect the Bears' defense at all. They played great. They will continue to play great, I think. And they'll need to.
I hope
if
so.
They have, yeah, they'll need to if they have, you know, their quarterbacks playing like they have been recently.
And here's where I want to piggyback off that. I don't think Tom Brady really thought that it was – I'm with Arians on this one. I don't think that he thought – I think he knew that it was fourth down. I mean, as Tom Brady, I think he was just trying to maybe bait the refs in this. I really don't know. I don't think he – I really do think he knew it was fourth down. I'm not buying that one. I'm kind of with Bruce Arians on that. I think that he knew what down it was. But just off your point, Khalil Mack is a problem. I mean, this guy is unblockable. They had the rookie, Wirfs, who's going to be really good in this league. They had him going up against him. And, you know, this Bears defense has it at all three levels, okay? They got the pass rush. They got Roquan Smith in the middle of that defense. And then you got the Kyle Fuller and Eddie Jackson in that group. I mean, that's a great defense. They're going to keep you in enough games. And I think that, you know, it is more injuries with Tampa Bay. I think Tom Brady's proven in the past he's going to get back on track at some point with this offense, and they're going to be scary. Leonard Fournette hasn't even been healthy yet, had one big game. Ronald Jones is becoming a very good back out of that backfield. So I think Tampa Bay's okay. I'm not going to hit the panic button yet. I'm going to give this one to the Chicago Bears. I think their defense is just very good. They're going to keep Chicago in a lot of ball games. And if Nick Foles, I know we're talking about Bears defense, but if Nick Foles can take this Bears offense to the next level, this Bears team is going to be a tough out in the playoffs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you think about it, right, so far 4 or 5 weeks into the season, all that offense really needs to do is score, what, 20, 22 points?
Yeah.
And they've got to win. So, yeah, I'm excited about that. I agree with you on a couple of points. I think the injuries are hurting Tampa Bay because, again, without a preseason, right, this has been an odd offseason to switch teams and learn a new system. So, you know, I think the Godwin injury, I think, is bigger than most people think.
Yeah,
I
think that's huge.
Right?
That's
if he has Godwin and Evans, I think you're going to see a lot of really high-powered offense out of Tampa Bay. I'll say this. I agree with you on the fourth down. I think he was trying to use, I'm Tom Brady, maybe I can get a fifth down out of this.
Think that's what he was trying to do. I mean, come on. Tom Brady knows his fourth down right
now. For sure. He knows. He knows the situation. I'm with you.
And Bruce Arians, that's what I like. Not to cut you off, Bruce Arians is kind of, you know, been hard on Tom Brady a little bit. He's not just sugarcoating stuff. He's letting Tom Brady know he's another guy on this roster. And that's what I like about Bruce Arians, holding everyone accountable. And but I think they'll be fine, Anthony. I really do.
I think so too. Do you guys have a bad before I go to my ugly? I'll start up top of Mike.
I think the bad for me is, I think going off what you said, I'm going to do the opposite. I think the bad is the Seahawks defense.
Yeah.
Everything you've just said about the Bears is like opposite of Seattle. Their defense is atrocious. They there are injured too. Jamal Adams is hurt. Quinn Dunbar is shaken up. They've got some D-line injuries. Marquise Blair is going to be out for the year. But, man, I it scares me. That game really scared me the other day. The fact that they couldn't get a stop. Now, they have been clutch this year on big plays where they need to stop. They have been good. But we can't – I mean, we're going to shatter the NFL record for most passing yards allowed. And with Pete Carroll as your coach, that really scares me, to be honest.
Can I ask you a question about them? Because obviously you do a lot of stuff with the Seahawks. How much of this? So obviously injuries for sure, but the scheme's pretty much the same. Do they feed off that 12th man, that home field advantage that much? Right. I remember a season not too long ago where I think they were undefeated or lost one game at home, but only one or two games on the road. Is it that much of a factor, you think, for them, or is it more the injuries and some of the personnel now?
I would say the lack of the 12th man is killer for them, because if you think about the Seahawks, they probably have the best home field advantage in the league. And with their fans being as loud as they do, it disrupts the opposing team's quarterback. It's harder for him to get in a rhythm. And then when they get a big play like a turnover or a big hit, they just really get recharged and re-energized by that crowd. So I think not having any 12s there, I think it really is not helping them at all. I think
I didn't mean to cut you off, but I've been to a lot of NFL games, and I got to tell you, I was in Seattle on business, and I was staying at the Silver Cloud. And if you know where the Seattle State, the Silver Cloud is right across the street from the stadium. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I forgot it was a Sunday. I didn't realize there was a home game. I was so focused on work, but I was sitting in the restaurant right across the street, and the windows actually shook in the hotel restaurant as the crowd started to like get riled up. And that's when I realized, wow, I don't think I've ever experienced being across the street from a game and windows shaking in a restaurant. So that's why I asked the question. I haven't seen anything like it before. It's fantastic.
Well, if you're being shaken like that in a restaurant, imagine what, you know, Kirk Cousins would have been feeling like,
right,
you know, on Monday night. So it's definitely a huge, huge blow for the Seahawks. And I personally think it's bigger than the injuries, in my opinion.
Yeah. Tyler, you got one?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I just had a phone. Okay. Okay. So my bad is the San Francisco 49ers, you know, going across the country and, you know, taking a beating by a Miami team who, you know, had only beaten Jacksonville this year. A lot of people, you know, I think San Francisco's -8.5, 9.5 point favorites. I mean, no one, if you tell me you pick Miami, I don't know. There's not a lot of people who pick Miami in that game. And the way they beat them, you know, was impressive to me by Brian Flores and the Dolphins. I mean, this defense played well. I don't know if it's just injuries just starting to pile up. Losing, you know, some of the players they've lost so far. Garoppolo didn't really look healthy as well. So a Super Bowl team last year, you know, historically they do not do well in the next season. So I think a lot of people had the San Francisco 49ers making the playoffs. So, and we'll see what happens. You're starting to hear a little chirping down here in Georgia about Matt Ryan possibly being on the trading block to San Francisco. That's just what people are bringing it up. There's a lot of dead money that would hurt the Falcons really bad. So it's probably not going to happen. But just the connection that Matt Ryan and Kyle Shanahan have, I think that's big. I think, you know, if San Francisco believes they're one piece away from a Super Bowl, you know, will they make that play at Matt Ryan? I don't think they will. But it's just something to look out for. Just something to get the get the blood pumping a little bit. Matt Ryan leaving Atlanta. You know, a lot of people love Matt Ryan. Me, myself, I love Matt Ryan. But I don't know. This year I've seen – I don't know if I'm just seeing the end of his career or if it's just, you know, just a slump right now. So, Matt Ryan to the 49ers reuniting with Shanahan. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but, you know, I'm put a little small chance that could possibly happen, but the dead money with Atlanta doesn't. And I'll talk about the Falcons here just a little bit.
I was say, not a terrible idea. And, you know, I think I'm with you. No one expected Miami to beat San Francisco. And again, the way they won, they made Miami look really good. I'm starting to wonder if Miami isn't a better team than I thought, the way the 49ers made them look. And this is a game where, you know, I thought this was a get-right game for the 49ers, right? They were getting Garoppolo back. They were getting Debo back. Kittle's, you know, in now kind of second game back. And, and that was the game to get things right, getting some of those players back. And, you know, coming off a loss previous week, this is the game. So I was pretty confident the 49ers were going to come out and have a good game here, and they didn't. So, you know, again, it comes down to – I never liked the Garoppolo signing anyways. So if they can make a move to get a, you know, because there's a couple of players. So before we get to the ugly, then let's pause there for a second and talk. So you talked about rumors here there in Georgia about Matt Ryan to the 49ers. Le'Veon Bell was just released by the Jets. Is there somewhere where he's going to land that you think? And I'm going to give you two. Or I'll give you one other name. So let me know about Le'Veon Bell and AJ Green, who's clearly fallen out of favor with the young Bengals. Whose young receivers, T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd, are looking good with Joe Burrow. They still need an offensive line. Of course, Burrow's running for his life, which we talked about at the draft time, he would be. Where do you think, or do you think, Le'Veon Bell gets picked up somewhere and A.J. Green?
Tyler, you want to start off?
Yeah, I'll start with A.J. Green, you know, and this is one of my favorite spots for him. Green Bay Packers. I mean, if I was Green Bay, I'd pick up that phone and I'd offer a fourth, fifth rounder, something like that for A.J. Green. I know he hasn't put up very many numbers in Cincinnati, but they're just not throwing him the football. Right. And him and Aaron Rodgers, this is a wide receiver core who has been depleted a little bit. You know, Lazard goes down with the injury. I liked what he's done. You also have Valtez Scantling, and then Devontae Adams has missed some time. So I think A.J. Green to the Packers. Or the Patriots. You know, the Patriots are always looking for another receiver. I think either of those teams. And I'm with A.J. Green. I think he got caught on the sideline saying, if they're not going to throw me the ball, just trade me. And a free A.J. Green, because he has been everything to the Cincinnati team, six-time Pro Bowler. At one point, A.J. Green was considered a Julio Jones-type player. I mean, these two were connected at the hip. Coming out of the draft, high school, same year, a lot of people favored A.J. Green over Julio. I was never one of those guys. I'm a Julio Jones guy. But A.J. Green is a fantastic receiver, and I think he can really help a playoff team. So I'll go with A.J. Green on that end.
I would love for my Bears to sign him instead of going to Green Bay, of course. But, yeah, I think Green Bay does make a lot of sense for him. And I would, again, love to see that pairing with him and Adams when both healthy, because I think you're right. I don't think he was happy staying in Cincinnati. I think he's on the franchise tag. Correct me if I'm wrong. And he might just need a change of scenery. I'd like to see that. Mike, what do you think? And you can Le'Veon Bell as well if you want, or AJ or both.
Yeah. I was just going to touch on Le'Veon Bell. I think a great team personally, not as a Seahawks fan, but a great fit for Le'Veon Bell, I think would be the San Francisco 49ers. They've had a lot of injuries at running back this year, and that's number one. Number two, with Jimmy Garoppolo maybe struggling, maybe C.J. Beathard, who knows, they need to lean on their run game a little bit more, and adding a guy like Le'Veon Bell, who has proven in his career that he could be a workhorse when given, you know, the right opportunities, the right offensive line. 49ers have a very good offensive line, so I think he struggled a lot with the Jets' bad offensive line. But if I'm Kyle Shanahan, I'm picking up that phone to Le'Veon Bell. I'm offering him a deal. And I think that 49ers can, especially since they're so injury ravaged, I just think picking up a guy like Le'Veon Bell, who has proven to be a game changer, would really benefit them going forward. And they got to keep pace with the Cardinals, who are really good, the Rams, who are really, really good, and the Seahawks, who are really, really, really good. So I think this makes a lot of sense for the 49ers.
Yeah, that division is turning out. We knew they were going to be good, but that's going to be a tough division. And whoever comes out of there,
yeah,
I think has a great shot of making it to the Super Bowl. Sounds like we're playing a little bit of Madden, though. If they get Matt Ryan and Le'Veon Bell, maybe we'll throw AJ Green into San Francisco.
Yeah.
Nice little...
Let's do it.
And I really do not believe Matt Ryan. I'm just saying I've read a couple articles. I'm a huge Falcons fan, so I don't think it's going to happen. I'm not suggesting it. I'm just saying, you know, think about it. Kyle Shanahan, Matt Ryan, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. The coach. So I think I called this maybe 2-3 weeks ago, as maybe everybody did, right? Dan Quinn losing his job there in Atlanta after those fourth quarter, you know, collapses. You got to put a lot of that on the coach, right? And I think they finally did. I'm surprised that the Texans. I'm surprised Bill O'Brien was the first one to get fired, and I'm surprised. And is anyone not surprised that Adam Gase still has a job?
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
He should have been fired at the press conference. I mean, let's be honest. We all remember what happened at the press conference. The guy looked like he had just taken a let's just be honest. The guy looked like he was blinked out of his mind at the press conference. I mean, let's just be honest. Let's call a spade a spade. And Adam Gase is Ryan Peyton Manning's coattails of that 2013 season.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what a lot of people say. So I think Adam Gase is and will be fired before the end of the year.
Because Gase didn't have really any success. What did he do? He went Chicago, Miami, and then the Jets, right?
6-10 twice. Yeah. He had 2013 with the Broncos. I think was his only good year. But having the recommendation from Peyton Manning has just gotten him job after job after job. So.
Yeah,
and he did go to the playoffs 1 year with Miami. All right.
Right.
He did take that Miami team to playoffs. But besides that, he took the team that was, you know, he basically given to him, got him to the playoffs, and then they just gone downhill from there. And same with the Jets. So, Adam Gase, you're a coordinator maybe, maybe we'll look for him to go to college, good college, something like that.
Okay, we're going to get to the ugly, but first, one more question. One more question before we get to the ugly, and that is, so we're going to assume that Adam Gase will not have that job long. You're a head coach, and you have all three offers on the table. Try to take out your Atlanta fandom out of this, okay? You got Falcons, Texans, and Jets. Which team is the one you're going to? Which is the best job for a coach to take over right now?
I would probably – it's all about the quarterback. I mean, if you plan to keep Matt Ryan and this group together – you may want to take the Falcons job, but I mean, if you already want a guy who's under contract, Deshaun Watson, and you know, but you don't have some first round picks either. You got to think about that as well. They lost two first rounders to Miami, I think. I mean, this team is depleted. He's made some bad trades, but they do have Deshaun Watson. But if you're going to keep the Atlanta Falcons core 10 to 15 players together, and then if you're able to draft guys, I'd probably take the Atlanta job. But you got to figure out the cap space. Julio Jones making $20 million. Matt Ryan making $30, $35 million. I mean, that's a big chunk of the salary cap for an offense who, you know, Matt Ryan has to play perfect almost because the defense is such a liability. And you really have to build the defense. And that's why people are not sold on drafting a quarterback early if the Falcons do finish in the top five. In the bottom five of the league, you know, I'm not sure. What do? Do you go draft your edge rusher guy, go in after the quarterback, or do you draft one of these stud quarterbacks, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Lance out of North Dakota State? I mean, these are some good quarterbacks coming in the league. Or do you draft, you know, maybe a Micah Parsons or a Penny Sewell, the offensive tackle from Oregon? So just so many options, and I'd take the Falcons job.
You got the Falcons? Okay, Mike. So he's got the Falcons job. You've got the Texans or the Jets?
I am going with the Jets, 100%. Here's why. The next 2 years, being that they have traded for – they traded Jamal Adams to Seattle, which I love. They traded Jamal Adams. They have two first-round picks each of the next 2 years. If I'm going to be a team, a coach that's taking over a rebuilding team, I want as many first-round picks as possible. As Tyler said, the Texans don't have any, right? I can't rebuild a team if I don't have first-round picks. And while Seattle's first-round pick is going to be hopefully in the high 20s to low 30s, it's still a first-round pick, and you still can get those talented guys. That's one. Number two, I am a believer in Sam Darnold. So I think you already have your, at least if not franchise quarterback, you have a bridge quarterback, a veteran guy who's proven to be solid that you can win some games with. Number three, people forget this, but the Jets defense, honest to God, is not terrible. They need some help. They need some coaching. But if you think about it, their best defensive player this offseason outside of Jamal Adams was C.J. Mosley. C.J. Mosley opted out of the season because of the coronavirus.
Right.
So you're getting C.J. Mosley back, who is a great middle linebacker. He's going to be a leader of that defense. So I have 2 first-round picks. I have a solid quarterback. I've got a stud middle linebacker. And I got a lot of toys to play with. I think I'm going to take the Jets job.
Yeah. And you could probably – listen, you can either – one of those picks is probably going to be first overall, right, which is Trevor Lawrence, mm-hmm. which you either draft him and either bridge Sam Darnold, right, because I think they get a third round if they don't resign him to his fifth year, or maybe you package either one of those quarterbacks for some more draft picks.
Right.
And I'm with you guys, right? Like I picked last, so I'm going to take – I obviously get stuck with the Texans. I would feel a lot better if they still had DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson. But out of the bunch, I probably got the best quarterback of the three. Not a bad starting point to take on a team. So, but I'm with you guys, right? If I had Calvin Ridley, Julio Jones, and Matt Ryan, I'm feeling pretty good. And like you said, yeah, with the Jets and those draft picks. So let's go to the ugly. And mine isn't so much the player as the play, right? We all saw it. It was terrible to see.
Yeah.
It's ugly in the sense that Dak has been kind of the consistent for the Cowboys. He, you know, the contract notwithstanding, and then to see that injury, see his ankle, I cringe every time I think about it. So that's my ugly, but in the hopes that he can, you know, recover, get back on the field. But that was an ugly thing to see. I want to skip past my ugly because I shouldn't have even brought it up. So I know Tyler has an ugly that we've talked about a little bit. So let's dive in a little bit deeper into your ugly.
Yeah, and I'm just going to talk from my heart right here. I'm an Atlanta Falcons season ticket holder. And, you know, ever since the Super Bowl loss, I mean, the Falcons have just blown lead after lead, losing to your Bears a couple weeks ago, losing to the Cowboys in a fashion that I have just not seen in a long time, probably since the Super Bowl. And, you know, I just feel like this roster, and Dan Quinn said it best, this roster is not an 0-5 roster. It's just not. I really think it was a mentality of the football team. I think after the 2017 loss to the Eagles, you know, the coaching and the brotherhood and all that, it just kind of got stale. And I read a report, you know, a former player said that as well, probably Devontae Freeman, if I had to take a guess, someone like that made the statement, wouldn't put his name behind it. But I just feel like the Atlanta Falcons are a good job. You get rid of Dimitroff, who – you know, brought Julio Jones to the Falcons. He did some good things, but he just wasn't able to build his defense or up front. It's won and lost in the trenches. Offensive line, defensive line, I truly believe that. You have to have the quarterback to kind of put you over the edge. And, you know, they really have to decide, is Matt Ryan part of the future? Can he win you a Super Bowl? That's the question you got to ask yourself. If he's not, you know, it is maybe time to move on. I believe in Matt Ryan. I've been a huge supporter of him. But 0-5 in just the last 3 years have just left a bad taste in everyone's mouth. And it's an ugly situation in Atlanta. For a lot of fans, a lot of people, Falcons had high expectations this year. And 0-5 just ain't cutting it. And you got the Carolina Panthers coming to the Georgia Dome kind of in a rebuilding situation with Matt Rhule. And they whip you up front when they beat you. I mean, at home. So I think that says it all right there. It's time to blow this thing up and keep the core together. But it's time to blow the organizational, you know, everyone, front office, scouts, everyone. I just think it's time for a reboot in the front office. The players can get there. But that's my ugly this week. 0-5 as an Atlanta Falcons fan. It's tough to swallow, especially losing the Super Bowl 28-3. I get it. I get the jokes. But, man, this is – It's just getting old. It's getting old real fast. Yeah. At least the Atlanta Braves are doing good.
You know, it's funny that you brought up, like, I love my Bears, obviously, but to give up that many points to a Bears offense that still hasn't figured out what they are in 6 minutes, because everyone's saying the fourth quarter, it wasn't. There was 6 minutes left in that game before they kind of started scoring. And that's when I knew Atlanta's in for a really, really bad, ugly season, unless they make some changes. So not surprised that Dan Quinn lost it. So Mike, we're going to end with your ugly.
All right. My ugly is bouncing off what you said, Anthony, about the Dak Prescott injury. I'm going to put a different spin on it though. I'm going to go, my ugly is the contract negotiations between Prescott and the Cowboys going forward, because they did not go anywhere before the injury. This past offseason, he was pretty, he wanted a long-term deal, didn't get it. He signed the one-year deal. Now going forward, I as much as I hate to say it, like, he's not going to get that long-term deal. And the ugly part about it is Cowboys fans are going to hate Jerry Jones because they were all for signing him long-term. Now he's not going to, I don't think. And he's been – I hate on the Cowboys a lot, but I have to respect Dak as the man. And to have that happen to him, and now his future is not certain. We don't know if he's going to play going forward. We don't know what his financial situation is going to be. I think that the contract negotiations after the season get really ugly really fast.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny because if they sign him to the long-term deal – you're going to get some people saying, oh, see, you shouldn't have signed that long-term deal because, look, he got hurt. Who knows if how's he going to come back? And now from a business perspective, I can't hate on Jerry Jones if he doesn't sign him to a long-term deal until he sees what he has. And you're right. I think it is going to get ugly because that, you know, injuries like that hurt. But from a business standpoint, you got to do what's right for the team. But from a, damn, he's given so much to this team, you hope that he kind of gets his. But yeah, he's not going to get anywhere near what he would have gotten this season. What do you think, Tyler, on that? The contract negotiations could be pretty ugly for Cowboys and Dak?
I think it depends on
how Dalton plays, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, and Andy Dalton's a good quarterback. He's not a great quarterback, but he can – you know, I think the Cowboys need to run the football a little bit more anyways. They're throwing 75% of the time anyways. They have Zeke Elliott. If Andy Dalton can, you know – just push the ball down the field. He's got Gallup. He's got Cooper. He's got C.D. Lamb. So he's got some weapons that he did not have in Cincinnati. So let's get that. This is not the same Andy Dalton that was with the Bengals last year who struggled. I mean, he's going to have a better offense. The defense is really going to have to step up now. We already know what's going on with them.
Right.
That defense has been very bad. But as Dak, I think the Cowboys will take care of him in a sense, but I do not think that Dak will get any more money than what he was already kind of given a contract. I think he'll get some kind of four-year deal. I know he wants a four-year deal. The Cowboys want to do five. Maybe you see that four-year deal that he wants, maybe at $30 million a year. You know, so he's going to lose some money a little bit, but he'll still get paid in a sense. But you hate to see that happen. I mean, you hate to see it happen because he was putting up numbers. He was going to break some records this year.
500 yards and a loss, right? That's all on the defense. When you put up 504 touchdowns in a game, you should be winning that game handedly.
Right.
And you brought up a couple of good points. So on the Dalton thing, I think Dalton doesn't get enough credit for how good he was with the Bengals because he was in a similar position as Burrow is, right? He was always running for his life. So I know it's a little bit later in his career, but I'm interested to see a guy who did fairly well with really A.J. Green as his only receiver to now have an offensive line, to have a running game, right? He's never had a running game like Zeke. And Zeke is a workhorse back, but Tony Pollard's not bad either. Like, they do have – they should have the ability to run the ball a lot more. And then you're right. Those weapons that he can throw down the field to, he's never had a trio like this before. So – I hope he does well, right? I had Coach Hugh Jackson on a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about, like, he went there because he's from Texas. He went to university, I guess, in Texas, and he wanted to kind of go back home because I was questioning why he would take a backup role. I thought he could be a starter somewhere. And he said, he wanted to be back in Texas. And I said, all right, well, now he's going to get a chance. So I hope he does well, right? But for all intents and purposes, he's a nice guy. But it brought me back to a point that you said earlier about the Falcons. You said with the $20 million owed to Ryan and the $20 million or $30 million owed to Julio, it's a big chunk of their cap. Is this one of those, hey, you know, it's unfortunate the injury that happened to Dak, but maybe we reevaluate where our money's going? Because you see the teams that are having success, right? It's quarterbacks on rookie deals, right? And then I can put my money into Kansas City, Seattle before Russell Wilson signed. His big deal was all into the defense. So they had a great quarterback, strong defense. Kansas City is great quarterback and a ton of weapons around him on offense. Do they start to look at, hey, maybe that's the new formula for success in the NFL?
Yeah, I think all teams are looking for that rookie contract. And I think if you can get a guy in there the first 4 or 5 years on the rookie deal, instead of making $20 to $35 million a year, I think that's where you can build it. Russell Wilson, I mean, that's what Seattle did. And even when they paid Russell Wilson, they only gave him $84 million his first contract. I know now he's gotten extended again. He's a great quarterback. He deserves every penny. But I think that, you know, if you can do that with these young teams, you know, I think that the Dallas – it would be really, really hard for them to get rid of Dak, not re-sign him based on what happened. I think it'd be a terrible PR. I mean, I think they'd have to just sign Dak. But I get what you're saying with the quarterback situation. And let's be honest, this Dallas Cowboys division is not very good. The NFC East is not very good. So Andy Dalton can still get them to the playoffs. I mean, Carson Wentz and the Eagles have had some trouble. The Cowboys have had some trouble, but it'll be one of those two representing the NFC East. And why not Andy Dalton and the Cowboys over the Eagles? They should have honestly beat them last year and won the division, but they choked that up. So we'll see what Dallas does this year.
Does the East, since you brought up the East, does the winner of the NFC East have a winning record this year?
No. Okay, the winner of the NFC East goes 8-8. Maybe they go like the 2010 Seahawks and go 7-9. I just don't see – I mean, the Cowboys are the most talented team, but they're not – I don't think they're well coached.
Yeah.
I don't see them winning more than 8 games this year.
Winning record, Tyler?
Yeah, I think they maybe – you know, Philly tied a game. So, if they do win the division, maybe they go 8-7-1.
I was going to say 8-7-1.
Something like that. I mean, you never know. I mean, you never really know. It's all about who gets hot at the right time. Eagles, you know, last year won their last 4 games to get in. So we'll see what happens. The NFC East is bad, and the NFC West is loaded. I know we talked about the NFC South before the year, but I actually think the NFC West is by far the best division. You could really see 3 teams get in this year with the extra playoff team.
The NFC West is the one division where the team that I picked, I did a way too early predictions. And right now, every team that I picked to win their division is leading their division. Granted, Philadelphia prior to week 5 was 1-2-1. So I'll still count it because that was my pick. But the NFC West, I actually picked Arizona on a bit of a gut. I went with Arizona. And although they still look good, it's still a tough one, right? Arizona, I didn't think the Rams would bounce back and be this good. I thought San Francisco would take a step back, and I really thought Seattle was going to struggle a little bit again, honestly, because of the crowd. And so I'm really surprised that they've come out so good. And Russell Wilson looks like an MVP, if not the MVP.
MVP, yes.
To start the season, right? So I'll let you guys. Mm-hmm. Last words before we let you go on week 5, or what to look forward to on week 6. We'll start with you, Mike.
I think what to look forward to in week 6. My favorite matchup is going to be the Buccaneers versus the Packers. I think 2 things to look out for here. Number 1, Tom Brady getting his revenge, because obviously that loss to the Bears was embarrassing. So I think he's going to bounce back against the Packers.
Oh, my God.
And then on the other side, you got Aaron Rodgers, who if he loses to Tom Brady, then the Bears and the Packers are tied for the lead in the division, which is crazy. I never thought that was going to happen. So I think that is probably my favorite matchup. So definitely make sure to have your eyes glued to that game.
I anytime you pick the Packers to lose, I'm in. Tyler?
We've been talking about them all episode at the Falcons. I want to see what they do. 0-5, what are you going to do? Are you going to keep fighting? Are you going to try to make a late run at this? Or are you just going to go into and play a Minnesota team who has owned you the last few times you played them? I think they're like 0-3 against them since like 2015. So Falcons, I mean, in a tough matchup versus Minnesota. Can they get off the schneid? And actually, I just watched the Atlanta Braves almost choke against the Dodgers.
I wondered what you were looking at over there.
Yeah. Y'all would have got some good stuff on video. They won 8-7. They were actually up 8-0 at one point. So, 7-3. They were up 7-0, 7-3 when I came on. So, man, Atlanta sports just knows how to get people's blood pressure going. And that's what I was kind of watching there at the end. But let's see if Atlanta sports can get back on track with the Falcons getting a victory.
Now, all Tyler, right. You mentioned blood pressure. You mentioned blood pressure. And as a Seahawks fan, I totally know how you feel. Because every game, my blood pressure in the fourth quarter just spikes.
Like, I feel like I'm going to have a heart attack every single fourth quarter.
Oh, you somehow, didn't like that fourth and goal? You didn't like that fourth and goal?
Somehow, some way, Russell Wilson and the Seahawks, I have to credit the Seahawks defense too. They always find a way to pull it out, but not without my heart beating about 300 times per minute. It gets bad.
And Minnesota's a good team too. I mean, so that was a great win by Russell Wilson, and we'll see what the Falcons can do against them. But man, Russell Wilson, MVP right now. I mean, without a doubt. So shout out to Russell Wilson, because he's 5-0, but finds ways to win. And then you got teams like the Falcons, the Jets, the Giants. They find ways to lose games. And that's not, you know, NFL's, you know, just a few plays here and there. That's what decides a game. So
you got it. All right, guys.
Yeah, like what you just said. Sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I think Pete Carroll said something in the locker room after. He said, you can't win the game in the first, second, or third quarter, and yet Seattle always finds a way to win in the fourth quarter. I think the fourth quarter is just so pivotal. And that's the difference between being 5-0, 0-5. Because, man, if the Falcons would just deleted the fourth quarter, I think they'd be like, 4-1 right now? They'd be set pretty well. So I think playing great at the right times and playing great late in games is really a great quality that I see from the Seahawks. That really encourages me. I would prefer it to be a little bit more of a comfortable lead, but playing great in the fourth quarter, I'll never complain with.
All right, guys. What I was going to say was thank you so much for your time. Good luck to your Braves. Remember to check out Mike DeFran on the 12th Man DeFran podcast, Tyler Crowder kicking it with Crow, and obviously the Worst Take Network. And of course, continue to follow Sports Fluent. All right, guys, have a good night.
Hey, we got basketball back, and it was entertaining, at least the first few rounds. Viewership, however, was not that great. In fact, this year's NBA final was the least watched in a long time, if not the history of the NBA finals. 5.6 million is one of the lowest recorded finals matchups ever. That's not good. Now, some will say it was political. Others will say you had a Lakers team playing against a fifth seed Miami Heat team, and they didn't expect it to be very competitive. There's a lot of reasons for it. However, what did I take out of this championship? Well, I'm a little biased as a Laker fan, so I'll say I absolutely loved the Lakers winning. And I think tying the Boston Celtics historically means a lot to someone who's a basketball historian. I'm looking for the Lakers to surpass next year and repeat and surpass the Celtics with championships, but that's more about me. But what did we learn about this team? The Lakers team is very flawed, although a superstar in LeBron James and in Anthony Davis can carry you to a certain point. The bench and the role players were a ragtag bunch. However, they were able to do enough to get LeBron his fourth title. On the flip side, Miami showed us some guts, and Jimmy Butler showed us that he could lead a team. Now, I still think he needs a running mate, and that's not to knock Bam Adebayo. I think he's going to be a really nice player as well, but I think they are one piece away. I definitely think they overachieved this year, and I think that played a role in people not watching this series. You were expecting to see the Lakers and the Clippers in the Western Conference Final, and the Bucks and maybe the Celtics or the Raptors in the East. And really, we only got the Lakers, right? We lost out on the Clippers. And this isn't, listen, guys, this isn't to knock the Nuggets or the Heat at all, or even the Celtics, although, you know, some had picked them to be there. But really, you didn't see the star talent that you were expecting to see. When it was Lakers-Heat, was it a foregone conclusion? Yeah, in most cases it was. You know, everybody had picked the Lakers. You know, very happy that Jimmy Butler and the Heat played as well as they did and kind of made it a series. But I don't think the series was ever really in doubt. There's a couple of moments there, maybe in a couple of games, but not the series. And I think that played a huge role in it. So that's where, you know, we really got to end it. So let's, one, say congratulations to the Miami Heat. They had a phenomenal season. They played really well in the finals. I think they should definitely keep what they got there and look to add a piece. and see what they can do next season. I'm a big fan. You know, not to say I told you so, but at the beginning of the playoffs, I told you Miami was the scariest team and Jimmy Butler the scariest, you know, non-favorite in the bubble this year, and they played to that level. To the Lakers, of course, congratulations to my beloved Lakers. Very excited to have another ring on our fingers here. And let's see if we can run it back next year. You know, I love my predictions, especially when I get them right. You remember back in week two of the NFL season, I was 16-0. And I think I bragged about that. I'm still bragging about it. And then now it's week five. We're heading into week six. And when it comes to baseball, having picked the Rays, the Astros, the Dodgers, and the Braves makes me feel pretty good because my baseball record wasn't so good coming into the playoffs. So I was very excited to see those teams all come through. So here are my picks for this round of the series. As I record this, the series is, I believe, 1-0 for the Rays, and the Braves and Dodgers have yet to play. And if you've been following my Instagram or Twitter, sports_fluent, yes, you've probably already seen who my picks are, but I'm taking the Rays over the Astros. I think this is the Rays year. Now, you'll remember a couple of weeks ago, I was in speaking with AJ Torres of the Calling Strikes podcast, and he's not a Rays fan and said, anybody, please beat the Rays. However, I've got them pegged as your World Series champions, but I'm not making that prediction just yet. I'm just starting with the Rays over the Astros. To the Dodgers and Braves, I think the Braves are going to be pretty scary, but I don't think they're going to be able to handle the offensive output that the Dodgers can put together. We know that the Dodgers historically are shaky. They go into, you know, some slumps where they start to play poorly, but I still think this is the Dodgers' year. They have that kind of the chip on their shoulders from what happened with the Astros and the whole cheating scandal. So I think, although it might be shaky, I still think the Dodgers come out on top and we're going to see a Rays-Dodgers World Series. Let me know what you think. Anthony K at sportsfluent.com. To the NHL draft now. And, you know, everything due to COVID has really been kind of topsy-turvy. Doing the NHL draft in October is kind of weird, but we did it. And I want to share with you kind of my two teams that I think did a really good job and two of the teams that I had graded as the lowest draft. As well, I'm going to, you know, as I mentioned earlier, talk a little bit about the Leafs. So I'm going to start with my first A-plus grade, which was to the Carolina Hurricanes. I think they had a really solid draft. You know, some of the guys that they picked up in terms of Jarvis, Gunner, Vasily, I'm going to say his name right, I'm going to try, Panomarov, and Alexander Pashin. I think they did a great job all around of adding to their depth pool. And I think, again, all of these prospects are really going to depend on how the team develops these guys. But I think they had a bunch of guys that they, you know, were just either overlooked, dropped a little because of whatever circumstances. And really, I think any other years, a lot of these guys would have actually been picked higher. So I think they got a lot of really good value and a lot of good talent to add to their prospect pool. So I'm really liking what the Hurricanes did. So that's my first good grade. That's my A-plus grade. I'm going to bounce back and forth between a good one and a bad one. So my first bad grade, and it was a D-minus, went to the Boston Bruins. Now, they're a great team and obviously didn't have a lot of picks, not any high picks, but I think they really reached for Laurie and Langenbrunner, where I think they could have got them later on in the draft. They're pretty good team to begin with, but I don't think they did themselves any favors by kind of reaching for those for the picks that they did have. Los Angeles Kings are my next A-plus grade. And of their picks, you know, there's three that really stood out to me. Bayfield, Granz, and picking up Faber in the second round, I think really adds to what's already a strong prospect pool for the LA Kings. I know I said it once already. I'll probably say it two or three more times in this segment. But again, if they can develop their prospect pool, it's probably the most talented and deepest in the NHL right now, and their future in LA looks really, really bright. The next D minus, and you know, you'll notice a theme here, right? Another good team that you know just didn't have. I think their first pick was, I think, 50th, if not a little bit later, is the New York Islanders. I give them a D minus, and they're in a situation where they need to start hitting on some of these choices, because although the team is good, the team is strong, their prospect pool really isn't. Langenkratz, I think, was taken too early, and DeFore, you know, nice player, but I think way too early on Lundkratz. And I just, you know, they're going to have to do something moving forward. The team's still good. They're still, look, this that has nothing to do with the team they're going to put on the ice next year, but they're going to have to start looking to the future a little bit. And right now, based on this draft, they didn't do what they needed to do. The Toronto Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs had, in my opinion, a really good offseason to date, right? I like their draft. I like Villeneuve, Ovchinnikov, I guess, Miller. I think we're all really good picks, obviously, depending on how they can develop those guys. A couple more picks in there as well that I think were really strong. But those were the three that kind of stood out to me where I think they got really good value for those three guys. Some of them are a little bit undersized, so you know you'll get they'll be criticized a little bit for that. I think they made the right choice though, going with the forward there. And I think more so, I think how they develop these guys, how they're able to incorporate them with what's been a really good offseason in terms of free agency and trades. You know, I know that some of the fan base will say, "Oh, but we didn't get Pietrangelo." Yeah, I get it. But I think they made some really nice moves. Now for the fix. Let's be very clear. This week's episode of The Fix will not be a debate on LeBron James' GOAT status. However, when we talk about The Fix, as you know, every week, we try to fix something in the world of sports. And this one is really perplexing to me because I, as you know, for my Lakers paradox of a couple weeks ago, I'm torn not being a super fan of LeBron James, but being a huge fan of the Los Angeles Lakers. I want to make sure that I'm not being overly critical of LeBron James, but when they won the championship, he talked about respect for the Lakers, which I would hope that we all have, respect for Rob Pelinka, okay. But more importantly, he said, respect me. And that one kind of caught me off guard, which is why I wanted to talk about it this week. Because if anyone doesn't respect LeBron James, I don't think you know anything about basketball. He is one of the greatest basketball players ever to play the game. Top five, without question. Probably top three, top two. Again, I'm not getting into the GOAT debate. However, he can literally do everything well or great when it comes to playing basketball. So who would, you know, the only thing that is disrespectful perhaps would be, one, if he believes he's number one on the list and should be the GOAT, and some people don't put him there. I don't think that's disrespect, though, for someone who says, hey, it's Jordan 1, LeBron 2. I don't see how that could be disrespectful. Now, if you said he's not a top 10 player, all right, now we're having a conversation. Where I do find where he gets criticized a lot, it's more about the way that he did things versus what he has done, right? Statistically, he has just played so long, right? 17 years that, yeah, he's going to have pretty much every record. You know, when people talk about, he's scored the most points in the playoffs and he's done it. Well, yeah, he's played 17 years at a very, very high level. Yeah, he should have those records. And kudos to him for being able to stay healthy and to stay at the top of his game for so long and be able to do that. But stats can be padded. Stats in a career, right? I don't think that's where the disrespect comes in. When I say it's how he's done things, I think the bar has been set where you know, historically you saw Magic Johnson. And don't get me wrong, there were players that switched teams and have are still great players. Don't get me wrong. However, you see a team like Magic Johnson, who came in and was a Laker and was a Laker for life, and you know, went to 9 NBA finals, won 5 of them. Probably the greatest point guard, again, arguably 1-2, 1-2-3, greatest point guards ever to play the game. We don't talk about him, shockingly, in the GOAT debate, but he's gone to 9 finals, and prior to this year, that tied him with LeBron James. His record was 5-4. LeBron James was 3-6. Same, I think LeBron James is more, if I'm going to compare game-wise, I think I compare LeBron James more to Magic Johnson, a very, very athletic Magic Johnson, more so than I would compare him to a shooting guard in Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant, for that matter. So you saw a guy like Magic Johnson stay with the Lakers and get it done. You saw a guy like Larry Bird stay with the Celtics his whole career. Obviously, then Michael Jordan, you know, hey, I give him a pass on the Washington Wizards, because if you know the full story, he was kind of, I don't want to use the word tricked into playing for Washington, but maybe we'll talk about that on next week's episode. But it wasn't really his goal to come back and play for the Washington Wizards. So let's take that out for a minute and say, look, he stayed with the Bulls. When he got drafted, don't forget, by the what they were called at the time, the Terra Bulls, right? The drug circus, the cocaine circus, if you watch The Last Dance, that was traveling around. That was a horrible team. And that's part of the reason why he didn't have a lot of success. He scored a lot of points. He was obviously phenomenal to watch. Didn't really understand what he needed to do to win. They brought in obviously some pieces, specifically Scottie Pippen. And then the rest is obviously history. But he stuck it out with the Bulls. He was there for, you know, 6 championships, 2 three-peats. Obviously, you know, that becomes kind of the gold standard that everyone's going to be compared to. Kobe Bryant comes along in the 2000s, right? He sticks with, although it was tumultuous, there was a lot of talk about him leaving LA, but he spends his whole career as a Laker. He goes to 7 NBA finals, has a record of 5-2, right? Just, again, it's in that Jordan mode. So you've literally had kind of 2 generations of sticking it out through the bad times, right? Kobe was on some bad teams. As well as obviously some great teams with the three-peat with Shaq, a couple wins there with Gasol. So, you know, he stuck it out, and, you know, they brought pieces in and brought what they needed to do to get those championships. But then when you look at LeBron James, and I think this is where he gets critiqued, and maybe this is where he feels disrespected, is he didn't stick it out in Cleveland, right? He was in Cleveland. They went to the finals. They got swept. Management, and I get it. Cleveland ownership is not, you know, the best to get along with. My understanding is, I haven't had to deal with them directly, obviously, but you hear the stories about Cleveland, and they went to the finals. You know, who didn't like, you know, whether it was a coach, the players they were bringing in. I don't know if he wanted more control over who they do, but instead of doing what traditionally and historically had been done, where, you know, you bring pieces into your team or you draft players to your team to build something there and overcome your opponents, he didn't do it that way. And I think it rubs a lot of people the wrong way, because what he did instead was he took, here's the best player on another team in that division in the East. So now you've pretty much sent the Raptors, who weren't that great to begin with at that time, down a new rebuilding phase. And we're going to go to Miami. And by leaving Cleveland, who's already was poorly managed, bad salary cap team, bad draft choices, right? We're going to stick them back into the lottery again. And the 3 all-star / Hall of Famers, right? We talk about, I'll get to that in a minute, actually. 3 Hall of Famers to Miami. And, you know, highest payroll, you know, great coach, Pat Riley, you know, all that kind of stuff, Eric Spoelstra, and we're going to win a championship. And people feel, and Rob Parker just wrote an article about this, people feel he cheated, right? He cheated the NBA. He cheated the fans by leaving and really, you know, I'm going to play with, you know, two of the best, you know, two, if you think about it, at the time, you know, Chris Bosh became a third wheel and all of his stats took a dip. But prior to that, in the East, right, Bosh, Wade, and LeBron were three of the top 10, top 15 players on one team. And they still didn't get it done, at least the first year, right? They only, what, they won two out of the four? It rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. So he feeling disrespected, if that's the case, well, the NBA felt disrespected. The fans felt disrespected that you did it that way. Now, we've seen other players do that since, but I think that kind of orchestrated by the player super team is where a lot of people had an issue. Then what does he do? Well, he jumps back to Cleveland. Well, in the time that he was gone, again, Cleveland's a poorly run franchise. I'm sorry, just call it for what it is, right? Everyone wants to say, well, LeBron left and they stunk. Well, no, they stunk before him. That's why they had the first pick in the first place to get him. And they aren't good at player development. They weren't good in free agency. They're not good at making trades, right? They're not good at drafting. And so, yeah, when he left, they were terrible again. And they tanked, and they got another couple of first-round picks, again, which they turned into, obviously, Andrew Wiggins, who they traded for Kevin Love, and Kyrie Irving. Guys, these are two superstar players. Kevin Love was a superstar player before coming to the Cavaliers. Kyrie Irving, although, you know, say what you want about his mental state of mind, he's a superstar talent. So he left two superstars in Miami and went back to Cleveland. And again, people say, well, yeah, he won a championship there after how many tries, but he also had two first overall picks, two superstars to do it with. And again, they felt cheated. And they were, you know, facing the Golden State Warriors, and that's why they lost. Doesn't matter why you lost. You play the team that's in front of you. That's it. Win, lose, or draw, your record is your record. So in the fix, what I'd like to say, so, and this is to LeBron James, is the if you need to create this I'm disrespected to motivate you to keep playing because you want to play more, you want to play 20 seasons, whatever the case may be, go ahead and do that. But let me say this, as someone who doesn't have you as the greatest of all time, I do have you in the top two, and I don't disrespect your play, and by saying you're not number one, it's not knocking your game. But no one's disrespecting you, LeBron. Do what you got to do. And congratulations on bringing my Lakers. Thank you very much for bringing my Lakers another NBA title. That's it for this week's episode of the Sports Bloom Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at sports_fluent. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel Sports Fluent and check out the website sportsfluent.com. Until next week, are you fluent?